This is the Humboldt Chronicles.
I am the queen of everything. You gotta be high before I can sway. Lighter tea and let it be. If you a viper.
I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask and Comet the Radio Dog. The Humboldt Chronicles is made possible by Goat Global Humboldt, Humboldt Urban Market, and Mocha Humboldt. Much appreciation for your support of the Humboldt Chronicles.
Our show this month will be a little different than past shows. For one thing, we don't have a guest. Summer vacation schedules made booking a guest a little difficult. Or actually, you know what, Chuck? You're the guest this month.
I thought you were the guest this month.
Well, okay. I stand corrected. We actually have two guests this month, Chuck Rogers and Larry Trask, both of Lost Coast Communications. Welcome, guests.
Thank you very much. What is our topic this month, anyway?
It's not topic, Chuck. It's topics.
In the plural.
Yeah, because we're going to cover a number of things in a format that I like to call a news roundup. And Chuck, I thought we'd start in everyone's favorite town, Washington, D.C.
Everything seems fine there, doesn't it? Well, it's a good call, Larry, because there's both a lot and a lot of nothing going on right now in Washington. As you may or may not know, it is congressional summer recess time, or excuse me, they call it state work period, when they go back to their home states and home districts and supposedly meet with their constituents, but really raise a lot of money. It begins for both the House and the Senate in early August, and it continues all the way through Labor Day. So there's a scramble right now to get a number of bills before a vote. You might remember back in April this year, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York made what he called a promise to introduce a federal cannabis legalization bill prior to the August recess. Well, of course, the April promise followed after previously announced deadlines came and went.
Yeah, Schumer's been working with fellow senators Ron Wyden of Oregon and Cory Booker of New Jersey on the Comprehensive Cannabis Administration and Opportunity Act. Mm-hmm. And there's been a discussion draft circulating since last summer. And here is Schumer's quote from April of this year. I'll do this in my Schumer voice.
You do Chuck Schumer? I didn't know that.
Do a pretty good Chuck Schumer.
All right, let's hear it.
Make no mistake, I'm working diligently with my Senate colleagues to make sure that the federal government catches up with states and the public. This bill will be comprehensive, and I promise we will introduce this important legislation before the August recess. Schumer had previously been adamant that he would not accept an incremental legislation. This they call it a skinny bill on the Hill. He insists instead that he wants comprehensive legal reform, and that's the only way forward. But as with all things in Washington, nothing is set in concrete just yet. In fact, just yesterday, Senator Booker, who happens to be chair of the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on Crime and Terrorism, announced a July 26 meeting of the subcommittee titled Decriminalizing Cannabis at the Federal Level, Necessary Steps to Address Past Harms. Now, the significance of this meeting hasn't been made completely clear, but it's not out of the question that the meeting could be a prelude to the introduction of the Cannabis Administration and Opportunity Act.
But here we are on the verge of the summer recess, and Senate Democrats are all but admitting out loud that they don't have the votes for a comprehensive bill, even if it is introduced. In fact, the Senate Democrats don't have the votes for anything at this point. Keep in mind that the House of Representatives passed their attempt at a comprehensive bill. In fact, House Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler's Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Expungement, or MORE Act, was enacted in the House twice on largely party line votes. In light of all this, some Capitol Hill observers are noting a change in tone, indicating that, after all, maybe a narrower piece of legislation just might be possible. Even though some reform efforts enjoy bipartisan support, cannabis legislation does not typically garner GOP leadership backing in either house of Congress. With midterm elections coming up in November, that handicappers opine will give control of the House to Republicans and might even flip the Senate, Democrats on the Hill are considering their options.
And one option involves something called the Secure and Fair Enforcement Banking Act, or SAFE Act. This is a piece of legislation that would give protection to financial institutions like banks that provides services to state-licensed cannabis businesses. SAFE Act has been approved by the House no fewer than 6 times, and this with bipartisan support, but hasn't gotten anywhere at all in the Senate. And in fact, earlier this year, the act was included in the House version of a China competition bill, but at the last minute, the language was stripped out before passage in the House. There's some talk of trying to pass a modified version of the SAFE Act prior to the election, or maybe even during a lame duck session if they do lose the House. But so far, no timetable and no promises have been issued. Watch this space, as Rachel Maddow says, and frankly, a little too often.
Yeah, yeah.
She loves that phrase.
Well, there's a lot to watch out for right now, that's for sure.
Well, we have an update now. After the show aired, in fact, one day after the show that you're listening to aired, Schumer did, in fact, submit his bill, the Cannabis Administration and Opportunity Act. Now, did he do this because he was listening to our show and he wanted to embarrass us? I can't confirm that. To me, that's the only reasonable explanation, but I don't know. I don't know that for sure. But yeah, Schumer made good on his promise, and he introduced his legislation prior to the August recess. So we stand corrected. I was kind of throwing some shade his way, and now I have to eat my words. So the legislation has been submitted. What happens at this point is not entirely clear. At some point, a vote will be taken on it, although people are still speculating that the votes aren't there to pass it. But we shall see. It may get through in some modified form, or it may form the basis of some provisions in different legislation. Over time, we'll just have to wait and see. But let me just state for the record that Chuck Schumer, good to his word, he did, in fact, submit the Cannabis Administration and Opportunity Act, and that was done on Thursday, July 21st.
But while D.C. is mired in its typical ineffectiveness, the Golden State has enacted some much-desired reforms. In fact, in late June, Governor Newsom signed into law AB 195. That's a package of measures that restructures parts of the California recreational cannabis industry. Most significantly, of course, the legislation eliminates the despised cultivation tax. That's a victory for growers that may, and we stress may, trickle down to consumers in the form of slightly lower prices, maybe. Additional provisions include changing the point of collection for the separate 15% excise tax from distribution to retail. The measure also promises no increase in the excise tax rate for at least 3 years. Other provisions include tax credits for eligible retailers, micro businesses, and equity operators. Finally, the bill includes appropriations for education, youth substance misuse treatment, school retention, law enforcement, and environmental cleanup for illicit cannabis manufacturing.
And Chuck, there's also been some activity at the local level, as was reported in Lost Coast Outpost. Eureka City Council recently approved an update to the city's cannabis ordinance to simplify licensing, to remove a cap on the number of cannabis businesses in the city, and to possibly allow on-site consumption at temporary events. Under the existing regulations, there's a total of 13 different cannabis license types. So following the City Council's action, the number of license types is reduced to just 3: general cannabis use, cannabis retail, and chemical cannabis extraction. The ordinance update also includes new tools for law enforcement. It opens the door to on-site sale and consumption of cannabis products at special events, though additional state approval for such event consumption would be required, along with some other requirements.
Well, compared to Washington, a veritable flurry of activity at the local level has been going on. We're going to take a quick commercial break right now, but we'll conduct a survey of state ballot initiatives and see who might be joining the Cannabis Club after the November elections. Back in just a moment. You're listening to the Humboldt Chronicles.
Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. If you're just joining us, tonight's show is a news roundup. In the first part of our broadcast, we looked at federal, state, and local regulatory developments, everyone's favorite topic. And now we turn to state elections.
And actually, Larry, before we head off way into the hinterlands, let's stay in D.C. for just one more moment, because just last week, Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser effectively made cannabis legal for all adult residents in the nation's capital. Washington has had a medical marijuana program in place for a while now, but has been thwarted by Congress, which has oversight in certain D.C. governmental affairs, in its attempt to expand the program to recreational use. Mayor Bowser recently signed the Medical Marijuana Self-Certification Emergency Amendment Act of 2022 that allows local residents 21 and older to self-certify as medical marijuana patients. The provision applies only to people who reside and pay taxes in the district, and not to, for example, the many, many, many people who commute into D.C. each day from Maryland and Virginia to work, although non-residents with government-issued recommendation cards from neighboring states will be served.
And, you know, I can verify that. I lived in D.C. and also Virginia for a while, and I know you lived in the area as well for a
little
bit.
I was in the Virginia area, yeah, in Arlington.
I mean, that was one of the features when I lived in D.C. that I liked the most, is that during the day, the population kind of doubles.
It does.
And then it clears out at night. You know, it's like the tide washing in and out. So there's going to be a lot of people coming in from Virginia and Maryland each and every day who probably...
Yes.
If I know D.C.,
mm-hmm.
you know... That's
more than probably.
That requirement might be a little soft in some areas. I don't know.
You're saying there could be ways that those folks could fudge things?
You
and
know.
And kind of...
Purely speculative.
Yeah.
On my
knows?
Part, you know, maybe
allegedly.
Things have changed.
Yeah, right.
It's law-abiding. But anyway, that's a victory for the people of D.C. because
yeah,
they've
it
been
is.
Trying to do this for a long time. And
yeah.
One party in Congress, I won't mention who, has been standing in the way.
Yeah, that's for sure.
In the states, as things stand right now, there are only six jurisdictions in which cannabis is fully illegal. They are Idaho, Kansas, Nebraska, North and South Carolina, and Wyoming. All other states have some form of legalization, either fully legal like California, legal for medical purposes only, or some states are CBD only. And even among the fully legal states, possession has been decriminalized in South Carolina and Nebraska. So ballot initiatives are underway in multiple states that, if they make it onto the ballot and are voted into law, would make liberalizing changes to the status of cannabis. Of the fully illegal states, only one has the possibility of moving into legal status post-November, and that would be Nebraska, Cornhusker State. Signatures are currently being collected for two proposed ballot initiatives, both of which would afford legal protections for medical cannabis users in the state. Activists claim to have turned in sufficient signatures to qualify both initiatives for the November ballot, but a recent federal court ruling may yet keep the measures away from voters. We'll have to see how that turns out, and I promise you lawyers on both sides are generating billable hours in an effort to sort it all out.
Maybe many billable hours, huh? Elsewhere, activity is underway to fully legalize recreational use in Arkansas, Iowa, Maryland, Missouri, North Dakota, and South Dakota, whose 2020 initiative that legalized cannabis fully was invalidated by the South Dakota Supreme Court. In some cases, initiatives have already qualified for the ballot. In others, signature gathering is still underway. And in still others, like Nebraska, whether or not the initiative will appear on the November ballot depends on court decisions. We shall see. In Texas, the only way to change marijuana laws there is through legislation. But, especially because of the medical marijuana program in neighboring Oklahoma, which we'll get to in just a moment, there is significant pressure on lawmakers to make that change. In some instances, cities can implement permissive regulations provided they can craft them in a way that's deemed consistent with state law.
Now, about Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And we've talked about Oklahoma on past shows. The Sooner State is in the midst of a broad experiment. They have a medical-only cannabis program, but the requirements for medical recommendations are pretty minimal. And that word describes the majority of cannabis regulations in the state, minimal. Is the experiment working? I suppose, like all things, it depends on who you ask. One indication that at least some people think the answer is no is the fact that there are three ballot initiative efforts pending that, if enacted, would make substantial changes to the way cannabis is regulated in the state where the wind comes sweeping down the plains. Mm-hmm. One would legalize possession and consumption for all adults, 21 plus, without the need for a medical recommendation. And the other two would maintain Oklahoma's medical-only system, but would make reforms in the way the program is implemented, and in one case, which particular state agency would do the implementing. But all three would impose additional regulations on the industry than currently exist.
Well, we'll have to wait and see how many of these initiatives ultimately make the ballots in their respective states, and further, what the outcome is after Election Day. One thing does seem clear, though. The broad trajectory is towards legalization nationwide in some form or another, at least by the individual states, if not by the federal government. When we return, we'll swing back to the Golden State for a story that has nothing to do with politics, elections, or regulations. This is the Humboldt Chronicles. Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. And Larry, we're going to be taking a trip down to Sacramento right now.
Sacramento. A lovely town. A little warm for my taste.
I like Sacramento.
But yeah, it is nice. There, it is relevant to what's going on here in Humboldt in a way, which we'll explain in a moment. But it's fair time.
Right, state fair.
Yeah, we got some fairs coming up here locally. And the California State Fair is happening right now down in Sacramento. It started on the 15th, and it runs through the end of this month. And so we could fly down there right after the show and get a ride on the Tilt-A-Whirl.
I'm game.
But you know what? They have also a brand new exhibit at the State Fair. Never happened before.
Something that's relevant to this show, I imagine.
How did you guess? I could explain it to you, Chuck, because of course I know all about it, but we have some audio courtesy of KCRA, that's a television station down in Sacramento. So let's let them tell us about it.
All right.
We're just a couple days away from the State Fair, and Live Copter 3 was up over Cal Expo earlier today. We saw more of the rides being set up for thousands of people who will be enjoying all this over the next couple of weeks.
KCRA3's Brittany Hope joins us now. She's at Cal Expo. So what's new at the fair, Brittany?
Yes, so if you're bringing the kids, there's two really cool new exhibits. One's all about cats and dogs, and the other is called Toytopia, and it brings you back to the toys from like the early 1900s, and they're all life-sized. It's really, really cool. If you're an adult and you're leaving the kids at home, there's another new exhibit, and it's all focused on cannabis. When you think of the California State Fair, food comes to mind. Lots of it. Rides and games are a must. How about adding cannabis to the mix?
Cannabis is definitely part of the culture here in California and has been for a very long time.
We went inside the California Cannabis exhibit before it opens Friday to check out the buzz.
This is the first year cannabis has been included.
It's historic.
We invite people to come through and learn, you know, see hemp plants up close, right?
Throughout the state fair, this exhibit will feature 55 different speakers, documentary films, and cannabis experts to help you weed through all the intricacies of the massive industry.
We had an awards competition. We had over 300 submissions in this first year.
A cannabis competition with three divisions and the Best of California category, which is like Best of Show.
How do you compete for best cannabis?
Yeah, it's all science-based, lab-tested competition, right?
There's no smoking, ingesting, or eating in here. Just a lot of cool stuff to look at and learn.
So you can get extremely high CBD products that are low in THC or really high THC products that are good for a Saturday going golfing.
Danny Kress has a stand here representing his dispensary in Sacramento. He says this first ever exhibit is an ode to the green plant and the role it has played in our state's agriculture industry and our history.
It shows how far we've come as Californians that, you know, we're willing and ready to have something like this that can help educate the populace about, you know, how important this industry is to the state.
We're live at the State Fair, Brittany Hope, KCRA 3 News.
And Larry, you know, one of the things that strikes me about this is that you normally think of the State Fair as just a family-oriented annual event. Corn dogs and really good rides and things like that to do and see and maybe spend the whole day there. But the fact that there's a cannabis exhibit there now just shows you how far we've come since, what, 2016 when Prop 64 was passed?
Right. Yeah, it's really, and she makes the point, the reporter makes the point in the beginning about bring the kids, mm-hmm. there's the you know, these toy exhibits, although she makes reference to the fact that the exhibits have life-size toys, which I have no idea what that is.
A child's toy, life-size.
Like, I don't what's a life-size toy?
We should dig into that.
I'm going to go just for that. But yeah, it really is quite amazing. I think it indicates more and more, especially here in California, but elsewhere as well, how, you know, cannabis is sort of losing its, you know, reefer madness coating and coming more and more into the mainstream. It's clearly not there yet, and you can see that by the way that the industry is treated, even here in Humboldt, but certainly elsewhere in California. There's still more to be done and ways to go before it's treated just like any other business. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they have this exhibit at the California State Fair, I think, says a lot.
Yeah, it really does. And there's been no problem there. I mean, I'm sure there are people at the fair who really are uncomfortable with that exhibit being there. I imagine there are. But the fact that it is there, and, you know, there doesn't seem to be any big problem with it, is saying a lot at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an important industry for California and for Humboldt as well.
Yeah, it is.
And there is some Humboldt news.
There is. You know, there's a competition down there within the cannabis industry at the state fair. And Humboldt County has done a lot better than you would expect a small rural place to do in a competition, any competition in the state of California.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
I didn't do an exhaustive analysis, but I did sort of do a back of the envelope tally. Mm-hmm. And I think Humboldt County has more winners than any other single county in California.
Yeah, it's looking like about 20% of all the awards in the state from the state fair are going to Humboldt County.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised by that, mm-hmm. but it is, I think it is a really positive thing for the county.
And it's
it really
good news.
Shows.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's go through the winners.
Sure.
There were several different categories, and even within those categories, there were additional categories. Mm-hmm. But in the mixed light category, Talking Tree Farms took a gold, mm-hmm. and a silver. Also, Hogwash Farms from Humboldt County won a silver, and Huckleberry Farms from Garberville won a silver.
And in indoor, it looks like Mocha Humboldt took 3 golds and a silver, and Talking Trees Farms got a silver in that category.
Yeah, that is a victory. And we should
absolutely
just disclose Mocha Humboldt is one of our sponsors.
Yeah.
But we have no influence over the California State
Fair.
Though we ought to.
Yeah. We should. We're from Humboldt.
Right. But anyway, congratulations.
Were you asked to be a judge? I wasn't.
It got lost in the mail. I have to assume.
That's probably it. The dog ate it.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, way
kinda
to go.
Kind of like homework.
Mocha Humboldt and Talking Tree Farms, Hogwash Farms, and Huckleberry Farms as well. And in the outdoor category, Alluvium Organics took a gold, and Talking Tree Farms took a silver, and Ridgeline Farms took 3 silvers. They're in Southern Humboldt. And again, there were a couple of different categories, which is why they were able to arrive at 3 awards. And then finally, there was the category that they described as sort of best of show, which in this particular competition was called Best of California.
Talk about competition. Best of California in anything. You're talking about huge number of competitors, right? Mocha Humboldt in the indoor division takes home 2 awards in Best of California.
Wookiees and Grape Cookies.
Yeah.
Oh, I would like the job of just coming up with the names of these. I can't do anything else. I'm completely useless in every other aspect, but I could come up with some names.
Yeah, some of the names are great, huh?
But congratulations to those folks and to Humboldt as a whole.
And you know, one more thing, our neighbors, there were also some folks from Mendocino and Trinity who won some awards as well. So if you look at the triangle in total, this area outperformed, I think, with regard to population. You would think that there wouldn't be as many from this area, but it shows that the skill and the knowledge is here.
And that the products are distinguishable from places elsewhere. I mean, there were some winners from Southern California,
sure,
and there were some Central Coast winners as well. But no one county did as well as Humboldt County, and no one region did as well as the Triangle in terms of this stuff. So, you know, we say all the time, and our guests say all the time, that, you know, this craft-grown cannabis really is better.
Yep.
And this is yet another indication that
this proves it, right?
In terms of this competition?
It's right there.
Black and white.
Yeah.
Gold and silver.
Yeah. So congratulations to all the winners from around here. I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. This edition of the Humboldt Chronicles will be posted soon at 941lounge.com, lostcoastoutpost.com, and at iTunes for listening and downloading. Thanks to KCRA in Sacramento for use of their audio, and we send much appreciation to our sponsors, Goat Global Humboldt, Humboldt Urban Market, and Mocha Humboldt. We'll be back with the Humboldt Chronicles at 6 p.m. on the third Wednesday of August, so we'll see you next time, August 17th at 6 p.m.